now time for a very galactic edition of Game Pass or Pass, the podcast where we play games on Microsoft's Game Pass service. Tell you which games to pass to your friends and which games to just hop in that ship and fast travel on by. I'm Corey. I'm joined by, the Constellation officer himself, Basher.
Well, I definitely want a free ranger, sir. Like, there's no way. Free ranger all day.
You can be both. I don't.
No, I don't go both ways, sir.
Okay, well, excuse me. We are here to talk about, so a lot of games coming out. So I think some people are going to miss this one. there's Mortal Kombat's coming out. Sea of Stars, Spider-Man. I definitely think this one's going to fly under the radar of a lot of people. So Starfield.
I bet they wished it did for a little bit, like at least a little bit.
At least for like 8 hours. look, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to say something really controversial right now. Are you ready for this?
Are you ready for this?
Did you know that you can rate us and subscribe on your favorite podcast service like iTunes and leave us a review? Controversial, I know. If you're listening to this right now, pull out your iPad, pull out your iPhone, pull out your Android, whatever you're listening on, and why don't you leave us a rating? More people then can talk about Starfield. That's all I got. Okay, so chances are you're already playing Starfield, right? So for us, the whole thing of this show is to say, hey, you should or shouldn't play this game. But I don't know is that really going to matter for this episode? Maybe there's a couple people out there that are on the fence. So we're basically just going to give our impressions of it. And then we will pass it on or pass on it for the sake of our game of the year. But this is a little bit different in basically that you're probably already playing this. So this is more of a free form. What you should and, so. Starfield, here are the details. Starfield is the first new universe in 25 years from Bethesda Game Studios, the award-winning creators of the Elder Scrolls V, Skyrim, and Fallout 4. In this next-generation role-playing game set amongst the stars, create any character you want and explore with unparalleled freedom as you embark on an epic journey to answer humanity's greatest mystery. The year is 2330. Humanity was ventured beyond our solar system, settling new planets and living as a space-faring people. From humble beginnings as a space miner, you will join Constellation, the last group of space explorers seeking rare artifacts throughout the galaxy, and navigate the vast expanse of the settled systems in Bethesda Game Studios' biggest and most ambitious game. This is available on Xbox Series X and S as well as PC. You are going to get cross-save compatibility. I can confirm that it mostly works. There's kind of a bug right now where sometimes on PC it will not sync your most latest autosave, it seems. Everything before it, so if you had two autosaves in a row, it would do that. Or if you did a quick save, it'll sync all that. But sometimes your latest save, it seems some people, including myself, are having that issue. But usually it's not a big deal because it's only a couple minutes. But just be a heads up on that. On Xbox Series X, you are going to get a 4K image that is upscaled, it looks like, from 1440p. 30 frames per second, and Series S, you're going to get, I think it's around 1080p to 1440p, also at 30 frames a second. A couple other things like texture quality, stuff like that, has been pared back. This is next gen only. And we got a main story of 18 hours, a main and extras of 47 hours, and right now there's a completionist of 212 hours. But obviously this game, that's going to be very dependent on how you decide to play it. So, Starfield. Let's talk about this little indie title.
It feels like an indie title at points. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Whoa! Starting off with the hot takes here. Oh, that's it. All right. Thank you for joining us. We have absolutely nothing to say.
No. Here's the thing. Here's the reason for that silence. As we talk about Starfield, I actually had it on in the background preparing for this episode. I want to make a save and turn around and start really get into the recording part of this day. However, new bug, not just one of the many bugs. I can't save my game anymore.
Oh, that's cute.
No matter what planet I go to, no matter where I fast travel to, no matter where I am, it says that I am trespassing. My quick save and my save function is not functioning at all. So that's That's Starfield for me. Just more, just it's Bethesda at its finest, and I mean that for all the best and worst reasons, honestly.
I wasn't really looking forward to Starfield, if I'm being honest, and it's not because I don't like Bethesda games. Like, I've played quite a bit of Skyrim. Like, I was an Xbox 360 per. Like, I got a 360 when Oblivion came out. I didn't get it for Oblivion, but I heard a lot about Oblivion, and so I had to check it out. I did not really play Morrowind, so like, that was a. Oblivion was a, I don't want to say a game-changing game for me, but it was, at that time, there was nothing really like it, right? And Starfield, my biggest issue with Starfield is that I like it, but I don't like it enough. And that's simultaneously the best and worst thing that I can say about it, is that I usually don't fault companies for over-promising and under-delivering because they're trying to sell a game, but this game is a lot of promise, and I feel like it didn't need to be, and that's kind of annoying to me. I don't think they needed to oversell this one. I think they could have just keep... They could have told us exactly what it is, and we would have been fine with it, but instead they sort of sold it as this vast open space simulator kind of thing, and it's really not... It's a very good and the most polished Bethesda game they've ever made, but... Because they kept kind of talking about it, it took me about 10 hours to really understand what the game was and what it wasn't. And after that, I don't have a lot of super negative to say, but I don't have a lot of positive to say. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle on it.
I'm mostly negative, honestly. I've been a fan of these games. I mean, I haven't played all the way through Daggerfall. I like going back and seeing where the genre began and how we got here, because Morrowind especially was just ahead of its time, and then Oblivion kind of built off that, and then we got it got a bit stale sometimes, but then you got your random New Vegas that brought a little bit of life back into their veins. But overall, that Bethesda Matrix is easily seen. It's no longer behind the scenes. It's no longer magical. It's really just in your face. Like, you know, you've played this game a million times for a million hours. And I really don't want to use that line that you see on the internet. Like, oh, it's just Fallout in space. Like, I don't want to say that, but at the same time, I generally don't see any new mechanics. Like the spaceships are the newest thing. It's like, to me, this feels like playing Assassin's Creed Black Flag. A lot of it's the same. A lot of it's, you've been here, done that before, but cool, we got cool ships. Everything else is par for the course.
So I guess where I come from with that is you're 100% right. Like, we've seen this game done so many times now, and they have said that, you know, hey, it's a brand new engine. And oddly enough, the thing that stands out to me most is the visuals, which is not what I thought I was going to say about Starfield. And that I really like the way the game looks most of the time.
As long as I'm looking at people, I agree.
Right. Yeah. Like, sometimes when you look around the world, like, some of the fauna and some of the, you know, the textures and stuff like that are weird. But then every once in a while, like, you'll go on a moon or you'll go onto this planet and it's just like, wow, like, this looks really cool. Like you can get lost in Starfield many times, but you also cannot get lost in Starfield. And it's a strange game to me because, like you said, been there, done that. But it's because of the interstellar sort of theme on it, I'm getting those highs and lows far more frequently in both ways than I would for a normal Bethesda game. So I think about Skyrim, and Skyrim was a game that I felt like I was drinking crazy juice when Skyrim was coming out, because everything I saw about that game, I was like, this literally just looks like Oblivion. Like I don't understand. And at that time, I was much younger and I wasn't an adult, and I was still an idiot more than I am now, I guess. And I didn't realize that was okay, if that makes sense. Like, I can you can sort of sell me the same game, but as long as you've innovated on it and I'm having a good time with it, that's okay. And so Skyrim took about 20 hours to click for me. And where it clicked for me was, is I stumbled into one of like the, I think they're called like the dwarven areas. They're basically like they're all like machines and stuff like that. Like I fell into one of those and I got stuck there for like 4 or 5 hours, but I kept just kind of falling deeper and deeper into this pit. And I'm just like, man, like what is down here? Like I saw new areas and new monsters and things that I had never seen before. And like, that's when that game grabbed me. And then after that, I remember I found one of those masks. And then all of a sudden I was on this quest to find all these masks. Like, that's the stuff that people love about these games, is every once in a while you'll find something and it leads you down this path that you didn't expect. And when that happens, it's fantastic. But because of the way Starfield is built, I feel like there's going to be a lot of people that are going to find those stories over and over and over, and they're going to love this game for 100 hours. And then they're going to be like me, to where after like 15 to 20 hours, that's happened to me like 2 or 3 times where I've fallen into this really fun story. But then the rest of the time, I'm not finding anything. And those are the moments where I put the game down and I don't know if I want to go back. And it's such a strange game. Like, and I can't think of anything else other to say than it's strange, which isn't a great descriptor, but that's how I feel, man.
I find the overall storytelling and world building to have taken a huge step backwards, because to me, it's not just the memorable big things that happen, that the big things that you find in these games. It's more important to me how you find them. And a lot of the, I think people forget, because people are vocal about it. What's lost on, I think, Bethesda this time around is, it's not just about the big events. It's a lot about the smaller events.
Right. Well, the connective tissue in between those events. Like,
for example, like if you're going down the road in Citadel, anything, or any of these places, to get from point A to point B, at that time in gaming, it literally felt like anything could happen. Like, how many times have you walked, have you saw someone coming down a road and you're like looking for help? And you're like, oh, let me stop and help these people. I'm a role player, a good guy. I'm going to help this person just for them to try to rob you. Now right. It's like, oh crap, I just got beat up and robbed on my way to this next town. So now on your way to this next town that you've not been here before, because to paint a picture, you haven't been to this town before. So what do you have to do? You have to get on horseback or walk, and you're traversing. You're learning about this area. You're seeing new things. You can go off the beaten path. You get robbed. You get beat up. You finally make it to town, and now you're on to your way to the next town to do the same, to do something similar, only to find somebody else down the road. Now what do you do? Like the role playing there is, it's not huge, but it's phenomenally huge at the same time. Like it's that little connective tissue throughout the entire gameplay about like just getting from point A to point B and all these little things you have to think about. Now, compared to Starfield, dogfights are fun. Like they're fun enough. I like blowing up ships. They look good when they blow up.
I don't know if I'd call them fun. Honestly, like if I had to poke at it.
When a ship gets good enough, it gets good. Like garbage ship makes them really bad. But sure. I will like my I got a brand new ship from the Free Rangers. It's decked out. I could blow up a bunch of fleets now. Like it's fun for me now. But even if you find it fun or not, how do you get into these so-called random fights? You fast travel and load out, and they're sitting in front of you every single time. Fast travel out, they're there waiting for you every single time. You don't see them coming out from deep space. You don't see them coming out from the planets. You don't see them rising from the side of the moon. There's none of that Bethesda magic that goes, wow, let me prepare. How do I do this? It's just they just spawn in front of you. And then they spawn next to you. Then they spawn behind you. In an attempt to make something so big that they think in and are correct in believing that their audience wants, I think they forgot about the much smaller connective pieces that make their games truly immersive, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say they forgot them, but I think it's more, there was a rumor a while back saying that, you know, I don't like to talk about rumors that often, but it's pertinent here because it was like, I think it was about a year and a half ago because the game was supposed to be out last November, right? And it kind of just didn't happen. And they never really said why. Like I said, it was for polish and stuff like that. But then there was some people that came out and basically like, they're having trouble finding the fun in the game. And I remember reading that at the time and I was just like, that doesn't seem right. Like, how could you be that far out and not know? But then when they delayed the game, they didn't put another date on it. Like, they just didn't talk about it. And a 7 month, 8 month, 8 month delay is not a small delay. That's not just polish. So I'm not saying that rumor is true, but what I'm saying is that I could believe that they too were having trouble, quote, finding the fun in this game. And I think it shows here. And I think what you are seeing and what you're talking about is exactly the issues that I'm sure they know exists of, yo, like, how can we make this more organic? Because like you said, it's, you don't really stumble into things because of the way the game's laid out. And there's so many different subsystems and you go from planet to planet and you can kind of land wherever you want. And, but the thing is it points out where you should be going. And Bethesda games do that before, but a lot of times if you were to land on the dark side of the planet, like you might stumble into something different and unique, but most likely what you're going to do is you're going to pull out your scanner. You're going to say, okay, what's this over here? And you're going to go look for it. And that's how you're going to stumble into things. And so it feels it is simultaneously the most Bethesda game I've ever played, but also the most focus tested game I've played by them because it feels very much like, it doesn't feel like towers from like Assassin's Creed, but it kind of does because you go on this planet, you pull out your scanner, it's like, okay, where do I go? Like there's not a lot of exploration in here. And if you do go and explore, because there's so many planets and what they're trying to do of making these sort of, what do you want to call them? Like, I want to say pivotal planets, but there's very clearly procedurally generated planets and planets that they did themselves. Right. And they don't have the benefit of creating a world like they did in Skyrim or a world in Oblivion to where they can literally just have 100 people sit in this world. It's like, okay, just make cool stuff. Like go in this world and find cool stuff. No, they had to kind of make all these worlds and then sort of fill them. And you can see that because there's a lot of empty space in these worlds. And that's the biggest crime against a Bethesda game, I feel like, is empty space. Like I'm not finding anything. And that's part of space though too, right? So like
you're right. See, it's the give and take in that, right? Because you're exactly right. That's a part of space. There's a lot of emptiness in it.
But also, my issue is we don't know that for sure because space.
Right.
Like, why could they not fill that with something else? Like, that's the part that I don't understand. Is space literally gives you a blank canvas of you can do whatever you want? I'm not saying every planet needs to be empty or filled to the brim, but like, I have not found a single thing where I'm just like, whoa, like, did not see that coming at all. There's good writing here, but I feel like there's not a lot of creative flow here, if that makes sense.
It's very strange to me how, and over time we will, like, someone will probably find this out, or they might even add it in if it's not in there, but what, something that was said in game that I just didn't like, and maybe it's there to throw me off, maybe, and again, maybe someone else will find it, but at one point during the quest line, multiple times you hear, there are no, oh, I thought you were an alien. Oh, there are no aliens. I'm like, but why?
Right.
But that's I played Fallout. Something really cool is when you find aliens in Fallout. That's crazy. But you want to tell me like the vast emptiness of space doesn't have an alien or two? But
how is there not a planet that I land on and it's a city from Skyrim?
There has to be that too. Right. But again, but the game's been out for a few days.
Right.
Some things have been found, some things haven't. We don't know yet. I hope those things are out there. But the fact that I have not heard of it yet is a bit concerning, because I feel like with the emptiness of space, also, I would like to experience the emptiness of space. Like, you don't have an experience. You just see that space is empty. You don't get to experience the traveling and the moving through this emptiness of space. Like, I think this game would have benefited a lot more instead of creating, procedurally generating multiple galaxies, create one really dense star system.
Yeah, it's tough, like bring
it in a little bit, because at the end of the day, what Bethesda has going for them and going against them at the same time is that you're Bethesda. We will, like, it doesn't matter you put out Fallout 76. It doesn't matter how broken your game is. It doesn't matter how broken this game is. Because I might even debate this is the most polished game. It looks the best, but I don't think it's the most polished. I don't know. Like, I think it might be equally broken.
Yeah, from an engine standpoint, I think it is. Like, I think people are forgetting just how broken some of those games were. Like,
I mean, I've already had multiple quest lines broken. I've already had to restart bunch of times. I mean, like, I built a new computer. I can't play for more than 2 hours, for more than an hour and a half or two without a crash. Like, it crashed on the Xbox twice already. Like, it's not well made.
That's the weirdest part, is like, it, this one for sure, like, I have not had anything like that. I had one thing that happened on PC, but I think that was my own fault because I was jacking around with DLSS. But on console, I've had zero issues, which is crazy. But then there is the antithesis of that, of being like, yo, like, I can't play this game. Like, and it's super strange to me that that's happening. But that does sound like a Bethesda game, right? Like,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Some people have zero problems. Some people have all the problems. Like,
right.
So that's why I'm just like, I don't know. I can't really say it's the most polished game, but you can, and I'd be accurate. So, like, I'm one of those Bethesda players that genuinely like the role-playing aspect of the game. You know, like, whenever I play a Bethesda game, I always play the super good guy. Like, that's just my thing to do. And so I always try to talk my way out of stuff and what have you. And some of the Bethesda games have done that pretty well. I mean, New Vegas is probably the better of them.
It's ironic considering they didn't make that game.
Exactly. But I try to do that in Starfield. And again, what breaks my immersion is the persuasion tactic, a skill, is a complete dice roll for every NPC. Like, the NPCs don't have an identity to them, so that when you replay that part, you can say the same thing, but it will work this time.
The dice roll on it's a little strange.
It should match what the person is. Like, these people aren't people, and I feel like you got that right before in another game. Like, so my overall issue with Starfield is it's the Bethesda package with a lot of these important parts missing.
So, and it sounds like we're pretty negative on the game so far, but like, I want to like emphasize, at least from my perspective, of everything that you like about Bethesda's here, for the most part. Like I said, like, everyone's going to have their issues of like, I don't like this thing, I don't like that thing, but there's going to be, if you are a Bethesda person, you're probably already playing this and having a great time. But if you're somebody who's, you know, maybe you bounced off one of those games, you know, maybe you like Skyrim, but you don't like Fallout, or maybe you like Fallout and you don't like Skyrim, you know, like, whatever the case is, I think in this instance, while all that is fun and I can pick up Starfield and sometimes I have a great 2 to 3 hour adventure that I can talk about and think about and be like, wow, that was a lot of fun. And there's an instance, like, one time I fast traveled to a planet, and then as you said, there was somebody there waiting for me, and they're like, hey, like, do you have any resources? Like, I'm kind of out of resources, and I'm just trying to, like, get to this planet. Can you help me out? And I was like, yeah, sure. But it turns out he didn't have the resources. She's like, okay, no problem. Thanks. And she's like, okay, we'll see you later. And then she like, she's going to hit the hyperdrive and she's like, there's just like an awkward silence. And she goes, okay, sorry. Like this is taking a little longer than normal. She's like, so where are you from? Like, and like, I was just like, that was, it was genuinely funny. I was like, okay, that's kind of funny. So like, then you're having this conversation and then mid conversation, as she's talking, she just disappears. And it's just like, okay, that was hilarious. Like that was a 30 to 45 second thing that I'm going to remember about this game. That's the Bethesda magic, right? And then I landed on the planet and I just happened to go into this mission that I really enjoyed. But then there was another time I took off, I landed on this planet and I was like, okay, like there was acid rain or something and I didn't have the right environmental suit or something. So I was like, okay, that's weird. So I go to this tower and I get in the tower and there's like level 25 people in it. And I'm like, I can't fight them. So I leave the tower. But then as I left, I guess I was in the acid rain too long. And so then I started like developing a cough for some reason. Yep, I was like, yep. I was like, okay, whatever. And so I was like, all right, I'm gonna go to this next planet. I land on that planet and I'm not exaggerating. The procedural generation created the exact same planet minus the acid rain. The tower is in the exact same location. The landing strip is in the exact same location. Like this is literally the procedural generation created the same thing right next to it. And that was like 30 minutes of just torture of just like, this is terrible. Like this is the No Man's Sky problem of like, I am making zero progress. I am learning nothing. I am doing nothing. And like you said, the thing that drives me the most nuts is I can't just pick up a direction and go and find something new. I have to kind of like find the planet that speaks to me. And I never really had to do that in Fallout 3, 4, Skyrim, Oblivion. Like I could just pick a direction and maybe I wouldn't find something that was super interesting that I wanted to do right then. But I still felt like I was exploring. And here, like I'm picking a planet and I'm instantly like, it's like I'm window shopping. Like I'm looking at this planet, I land and I'm just like, maybe not. And I leave, you know, like that's the part that's really making me bounce off this game. And maybe bounce off isn't the right word of just like, there's other stuff I want to play. And it's strange to me that like, I will pick up a controller and I'll launch Starfield. And within like 10 minutes, I'm like either yep or nope. And that's.
Yeah. Every time.
Yeah, and it's just like, God, like I'm just not having a good time. I'm straight up not having a good time. And then I play something else. But then there's other times, like I said, like it grabs me and like I find a cool weapon or I go in this zero gravity area. Like there's something really fun about landing on a planet and having no idea what type of gravity there's going to be, because sometimes you'll kill people and like they'll die in funny ways. You'll throw a grenade and like the grenade won't fly the way you think it will because like, oh crap, I didn't think about that. You know, like. There's a lot of that stuff, but I'm with you in that I didn't need 1,000 planets. I think if you would have done 50 planets even that are just like super unique, you know, almost like an Outer Worlds style, where Outer Worlds is a Bethesda game made by people, not Bethesda, right? And I think that they did some things better than them. And I think Bethesda looked at that and I think they tried to implement some of that, but from a engine perspective, yes, this might be the least buggy, but from a Bethesda perspective, I think this is their least Bethesda game. And so people are going to have fun with it, and I am enjoying my time with it sometimes, but that's almost like the biggest slap in the face I could give it, right? Like,
I mean, to me, that's just a mark of something you don't have to ever play again. Right. when you're looking at a game, if you're looking at a game that's 10 hours long and you have fun with it sometimes, that's one thing. When you're looking at a game that's 200 hours long, you have fun with it sometimes. I feel like they missed the mark. And
see, I don't. I feel like I cannot call Starfield bad. I can't, because
I'm not calling it bad. I mean, like it's technically sound.
Right. But saying it missed the mark to me, like that's not wrong, but that sounds too harsh because like I said, it's.
Oh, if it wasn't for this podcast, I would not have played as much as I did.
Yeah, that's
like,
fair.
I'm absolutely done with this game. Like I'm not spending 200 hours to have fun with something sometimes. Like it's just ridiculous to me.
It's like, yeah.
Like it's just not, it's, The problem is, again, it's not me trying to hate on Bethesda. My biggest issue is I could see it all there. That Bethesda part, that Bethesda part, that Bethesda part. It all works. It's all there, but it's not connected right. Like, I see pieces, but it's just not connected right. I mean, for me, the better experience has been the very, very long faction quest lines. Like, those are cool because, like, because then it forces you to be on the same two or three planets, same two or three areas. And then you get to know that area, know those planets, know those people, and then you get to get invested in those worlds. But the second you have to leave and bounce back a bunch of times, there's nothing in between besides loading screens. Like, it's really... Yeah,
loading times are like, I don't want to sound like a snob, but like 15 second loading screens feel like an eternity now.
Get it this often. Like, if you get one, every time you randomly leave a town, like, sure, but this is fast travel of the game. And like, it's not, and I also have to say, to be mean about it, because you're traveling to so many different planets, but when you're getting that many loading screens, you do start noticing. You do start counting. You do start going. All right, I'm about to make this hyper jump. Let me go get a drink real quick.
Right.
This is gonna take a second. Like,
it's just like I come from, I don't know why I say this as if like it was that long ago, but like it was just last generation where we literally had minute long loading screens at times. You remember Witcher 3? That game took like a minute 30 to boot up. You know, like, not even exaggerating. I remember when I got an external SSD and I cut those loading times in half, and it was still, you know, still ridiculously long. But now we're in the era of just like, yo, loading screens are 3 seconds long. It's a lot better on PC for sure. Like, if you've got a decent NVMe drive, you can cut those loading times in half. But it's still kind of strange. But, and so I also want to preface, you know, say this is of, This game is massive in a way that we've barely scratched the surface. Like, we could talk for another 2 hours of just about things that we like, things that we don't like. And that's special. Like, I want to give them credit where credit's due of creating something on this scale. Not just like literally there's thousands of planets, but like there's so many different directions, so many things that can go, and everybody can have all these different experiences. They should be commended for that, because that's true to who they are. But my thing is that I feel like, because of the theme and because of, I don't know exactly what, some of that DNA is harder to find. And what's crazy to me is that it seems like the longer you play the game, because of some of the skills you unlock and because of how you move through the game, like the game, this is the first time I've ever played a Bethesda game, and I feel like the skill tree is there to make the game suck less. And I hate skill trees that do that. But this game for sure has that problem, especially at the start point of like, why do I have to unlock the targeting thing on the ships? That should be there. Like, that completely changes the dogfighting in a positive way. It's the same thing with the scanner. Like, I should not have to unlock a better scanner. Just give me a good scanner, because it makes that game suck a lot less. And so I think there is some. Go ahead.
Oh, why did you bring that up? Why did you do it?
I don't know which one.
It was one of the things I conveniently buried. Like, the skill system sucks. It's not even bearable or standard. It sucks. Like to that point, they give you a boost pack, a jet pack. You have to spend a point to use the pack that you already have on your back.
I picked a class that had it at the beginning, so I didn't realize that, but then I did eventually, as I was looking at the tree, I was like, so would I have had to unlock that? And I was like, yeah, I guess
yes,
I probably would
have.
That's the kind of
stuff
that's
hour game without it.
Yeah, that's the stuff that's kind of weird to me. And again, the game is so massive that it's like, we're more negative than we're positive right now, and it's not because we think the game is terrible by any means, but it's just like, this one's not clicking with us. And I want to make it clear that we were very, very adamant that like, we were not super excited about this game. But I don't think we're alone in that. I think a lot of people that enjoyed even like Fallout 4 is kind of considered, I mean, if you don't count 76, because they kind of didn't make that game, but whatever. Out of their single player games, Fallout 4 is kind of considered their worst one. And I agree.
Right.
Like, yeah. I did not like Fallout 4 at all. I tried playing that game three times. The first time I bounced off it a couple hours. The second time I got about 10 hours in and I was just like, I think I'm good. Like, I don't need to see any more of this. And I think where I'm struggling is that I can't tell if this is a problem with me. Is it a problem with the theme? Is it a problem with the game? Or when Elder Scrolls 6 comes out, can they do this game again? And will fans be happy with it? That's the question that I want to know. And I don't know if it can be answered right now. Of just like, am I crazy that I find it super strange that whenever you talk to somebody and if there's a conversation going on, it does a full screen. Like, I'm talking to this guy and then dude bro that's with me, it just like changes to a full frame of this guy, center frame, dead eyes staring at me. Like, it's awkward. It's clunky. It's weird. Like, that's the stuff that's starting to stick out to me. And I don't know if it's because I'm just over it or do people really care? Like, I don't know.
The Bethesda fans don't care. Most people are. If you're not a Bethesda fan, you're completely over it. I'm completely over it. I don't like how they try to force this stage play type of camera whenever there's dialogue happening because it just doesn't work. It doesn't work anymore.
Like, yeah, I think that's where
it was fine back then because technical limitations and you can, by doing it this way, you can hide things off screen and stuff like that. It does not work anymore. It is broken. Like, it is strange. It is weird. It's clunky. It highlights the ugly. Like, because your character models still aren't great. And then it's very strange when I'm seeing the same faces cloned so many times because of the way you shoot the scenes, because I swear, like, they're cloning like major character faces, like in NPCs. I'm like, this, and they're just changing the hair on them. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, it's too big. You got no one to pull it back. And again, there's so many things in this game that because they needed to do all this new stuff that I do appreciate, that they didn't have time for the small to focus on the smallest stuff. I mean something as small as, I believe it was Oblivion, I think it was Born in Oblivion, I think I'm not sure if it was in Skyrim or not, but if you walk into a town with your sword drawn, a guard's gonna be like, yo, where are you going?
Right. Yeah.
What's up, bro? Like, chill out, put that away.
Yeah, there was statuses of like, you know, hey, are you being aggressive, like, right now? Like,
that thing of, I see you in the world with me. I'm going to notice you. I'm going to say something. I'm having full blown fashion, like, quest conversations with my BFG out and no one's saying anything. And if this was an indie game, you'd be like, whatever, all right. But this is Bethesda. You've been doing this for so long that you've got it right for so long that you've just forgot that this was the thing that you do. The bounty system, it's not even cute anymore. It's the same exact bounty system.
It adds
you had it's 20 years ago.
It's annoying at this point. Like, it's not.
It was clever then. It was cute then. But now it's the same exact bounty system, and we know why you did it, is because you're busy making a million planets. I get it, but no one to scale back a bit. Like, this, I dislike this game so much because it's lacking the Bethesda magic that I like so much.
Yeah, that's fair. I think, and that was kind of the criticism of Fallout 4, right? Fallout 4 felt a little bit too trend chasing. Like, even though they weren't trying to make The Witcher 3, but in Fallout, it just, if you remember, that game didn't have a lot of the, that's not fair, at certain points it didn't have the camera angle. You had a voice protagonist in 4, like,
right? Yeah,
like that was a major departure for them, and people didn't like it. they're like, I don't like this. And I think what I want to say is being missed, but this is a situation where like sometimes the fan doesn't know what they're asking for, right?
Absolutely.
And,
yep.
And while I didn't like that, it was that he was voiced terribly, and you were kind of trying to like make this more cinematic without ever thinking about it, if that makes sense. Like you thought about it, but it just didn't feel right. Like it just felt like it's like, okay, well, people, like, we have to change this for the sake of changing this because we can't get away with it anymore. And now it's kind of the opposite end of like, well, we know what we make, so therefore you're going to put up with it because this is the game that we make. And it's like, that's fair, I guess. Like, but at this point, you've made this game so many times that I'm just not interested anymore. And I don't think I'm going to be the only one. I think there's going to be a lot of people that bounce off this one that love Skyrim, that loved Oblivion. And even if they don't, I don't think they're going to spend nearly enough time. Not enough. They're not going to spend as much time as they did with those other games. And I'm one of those people. Like, I played Oblivion and Skyrim a ton, even though I will sit here and I will argue till I'm blue in the face that there's more wrong with those games than people like to admit. And that's totally fine. But I understand the magic of those games. And this one, I feel like even as somebody who can understand the magic, I think a lot of it's missing here. And like you said, it's weird to me. It's just, it's such a strange game from them. And I don't think we're going to be alone. So, but we do have a question that's going to take a little bit of time. So let's wrap it up here a little bit. Like I said, I don't hate this game. And unfortunately, like, there's been a lot of discourse around like review scores, and we're going to talk about that because someone did write in about it. But, I'm not going to give a review score on it, but what I'll say is that I think that the people that are being genuine about their issues with this game, I think they're real. I think they're very real. And I think that the Bethesda magic is just not present enough that Starfield will be their least memorable game in its current state. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe in time they'll fix a lot of these things. Maybe their expansions will fix a lot of things. Skyrim only got better, right? So in its current state, I think it is their weakest game in terms of memorable factor. I think Fallout 4 is a worse game, but in terms of the...
At least you remember how bad it is. I mean, you remember what you don't like about it, like more vividly.
Right. But in terms of just like it being a Bethesda game, this one feels the least Bethesda-like, and that's the biggest fault that I can give it. I will probably keep playing this and dabbling in it every now and then. I'm very curious to see what the patches do and what they're going to add and change and things like that. But I'm not really going to keep my eye on it a close one. Like, there's a lot of other stuff coming out right now, and I'm far more interested in that, which isn't super surprising for me, but I was hoping I was going to be wrong, if that makes sense. I was hoping that they were going to, you know,
I'm with you there.
Change me, you know, change my mind.
I'm with you. I'm definitely with you there. Like, I really wanted them to prove my biases wrong. Like, I wanted to go in and be like, Bethesda's back. Like even if they do the exact same thing as I expect them to do, I really thought they're going to do that, but just do it with this exceptional amount of polish and magic. But I just didn't get it. I didn't feel it this time around.
Yeah. Some people will. Like, again, I want to make it clear. Like, I don't think this is a bad game, but it's just like, I don't want to say they've been surpassed. I don't want to say anything like that. It's just like,
they've definitely been surpassed.
It's a much different landscape of games now. And
they have been surpassed by a lot of people. Like, I would say even an indie developer like freaking like No Man's Sky at this point, after all the patches, like, they figured out how to go from planet to planet
different game though. Like,
it was different, but they figured out how to do it. Like, it doesn't.
But it all, it took them 7 years. Like,
I'm not giving them credit for lying to people for 7 years. I'm just saying, they figured it out, and they're not Bethesda. I mean, Rockstar already figured out years ago how to make you a part of the world, immersed in the world, and instead of what I have now, and I can just walk around with my guns out, no one's going to say anything. I mean, the CD Projekt Red already figured out how to make compelling quest lines that keep you engaged for hundreds of hours. It's not even the main quest line.
Yeah, like, I think, yeah, that's, I was going to say, like, to me, this
surpassed by so many people at this point. They need to, like, I think Elder Scrolls 6 needs, has to be built outside of their Bethesda box of ideas. They need to see what's came out, what's been done, and how to make a Bethesda game out of that.
Yeah, I'll be super curious. Like I said, I don't know if they can make this game again. And I'm not saying that to be facetious of like, they only make the same games, but it's like, again, you can see this is a Bethesda game. I don't think this is quite a Cyberpunk moment for them of like, it's a different situation. But the thing about Cyberpunk was that I don't think you could look at that game and look at The Witcher 3 and say this came from the same developer.
Agreed. Yeah.
So I want to see that from Bethesda. I want to see Bethesda make a new game. That's what I truly want to see from them. Cyberpunk is nothing to write home about. Like, I am actually very interested in Phantom Liberty, and it seems like they finally are releasing the game that they should have released 3 years ago. That's not the point, though. But my point is I want to see Bethesda make a new game and not a total conversion mod. And I say that with the utmost respect of I will totally, like, I'm a person that plays every Diablo game, they'll play every Doom game, but those games, they do change from game to game, and there's a lot about Starfield that hasn't changed. I want to see Bethesda change a little bit. So I think there's going to be a ton of people out there that are think I'm crazy and think that we're wrong, like this is the best game ever made. But I think that we're not alone in that. I think a lot of people are going to be like, all right, like this is one too many times. I'm ready for something new from them. So
I'd rather play Remnant 2 right now.
I still want to play that game. I just don't have any time. So, all right. So we do have a question, and I don't have a name or anything on this, and it just says very, very quickly, what do you think about IGN 7? And it doesn't even say Starfield, which is kind of funny. So I appreciate the question because, A, you did what we said you should always do. 574-651-9256. Shoot us a question right now. We just talked about Starfield. So when you say, what do you think? So I don't even know if you're aware, because I know I'm far more plugged into sort of the rumor mill and the rap sheets of the gaming landscape. But Dan Stapleton at IGN slapped a 7 on Starfield from IGN. And as the internet will do, the internet will internet. And immediately accusations are flying around of, you know, why was he reviewing the game? And like, he didn't play it long enough. And then you've got the other, you know, you have the defenders of Dan Stapleton saying, see, look, Starfield sucks. And then you've got the people on the Xbox side saying he's a paid shill. He does it. He's a Sony guy. Like, it's,
there's the problem right there and there. Like, I mean, we had a conversation about this, about another game, I think, just recently, just between the two of us. IGN has ruined the 7.
Right,
they like whether it's you, them, me, like of a scale of 1 to 10, 7 is good. Like the amount of almost if not actual arguments I've had with people of me saying, yo, this game's really good, you should play it, I like this game, it's good. Like, what would you rate it, 7? Like, really? Right. They said it was good though. Like, what do you? It's a 7. Out of a 10, like, what do you, if you were in a casino, you had like, 7 to 10 to win $1 million, you're betting that money. Right. Like if you had, like, it doesn't make sense to me how that scale has been broken so bad in the internet, and people have grown up with this idea of a 7 being a bad game. I think 7 is perfect for to describe a game that you think is good and has a good amount of flaws as well, but it's mostly good. So 5 is average.
So it's, while I agree that they broke the 7, what I'll also say is that I don't know that they broke the 7, but it's more of the, look, review numbers are dumb in general, right? Because there is no, there's no book on this. There's no like a 7 to you can mean a different, to me, you know, like you just said, a 7 could be great to you, and a 7 to me is like unplayable.
But that's the thing, though. Like, a 7 should not be great nor unplayable.
Right.
It just shouldn't
you're,
be.
You're not
it's
wrong.
A 7.
You're not wrong.
Like,
but again,
people are wrong. You people are wrong.
So I want to answer this question in like two ways. One, look, this is in a vacuum, okay? Writer, I have no idea if you think this 7 is a good or a bad thing. Like, so I don't want to frame this as you, but whoever sent this, most of the people making a big deal out of this are warring for one thing or the other. I think we do a pretty good job, even though we're an Xbox focused show because of Game Pass in general. I like to think we're pretty unbiased. Like, we have biases towards certain games and genres, but when it comes to brands, you know, I think we've passed on more Microsoft games than we have suggested, honestly. I think last year was the first time in like the 3 years we've done this that a Microsoft game actually took our game of the year in Psychonauts 2. So like, but which is funny because they kind of, that really wasn't, I'm not,
that's not their game anyway.
Right. Quote, it's not their game, which is true, but not true. But again, that goes into the dumb console warring stuff of it, whatever. The games are games. That's how I like to view it. But the people that are upset at IGN for this, most of them are people that care about the review scores. But I do want to point out, unfortunately, review scores do matter, though. Like, the Metacritic score does matter. It's a very sad and unfortunate place that we found it in, that of like bonuses and how some developers get jobs. And like working on The Last of Us, because it gets a 10 out of 10, looks better on your resume than working on a game that got a 7 out of 10 on Metacritic. It's very unfortunate that it works this way. And so what I want to say is that not only has IGN, quote, broken the 7, they have not justified why it is a 7. I've read the review, and while I agree with a lot of things that he says, why is this a 7 compared to something else that he's reviewed that is also a 7? That's why these scales make no sense, because a 7 in a NASCAR game is not the same as a 7 in Starfield. Like, the ambitions, like what they're trying to do and who they are completely different things. So that's why that scale has always been dumb and never makes sense. But unfortunately, this is where we are. All that being said, the days of outlets, of IGNs, of GameSpot, they know their days are numbered, right? Like, no one gives a damn about IGN other than that, the fact that they have a review score. And I'm actually okay with that, because now people are going to YouTube and they're finding people that they like. They're not finding outlets that they like. That is far more valuable to me as a consumer than a company giving a score on a number. So, or a number for a game, a score on a game. Like, does that make sense what I'm saying?
It does. I agree with that, but and at the same time, I still have respect for the more credible outlet and credible number. As much as I, like, again, I mostly agree with you. Like, I'd rather just go on YouTube and find some reviews of all the people that I like and see what their opinions are. But at the same time, it's a necessary evil, because they're going to play most of the games. They're going to get most of the stuff. So it's like they'll get most of the eyes on, hands on stuff. Like, it does matter what they, it does matter that they exist, but I don't like IGN specifically. But at the end of the day, it comes down to me, take everything with a grain of salt. Just like you said, a NASCAR 7 is not the same as a Starfield 7. If you're looking at those two reviews, you're wondering why those two were the same. I'm hoping the reader's using some common sense and saying, "Well, I came here because I like a NASCAR game. I don't really care about Starfield, so the 7's fine with me." As opposed to, as you pointed out correctly, I think, is the people that care most about it are the people that are people that console warring, essentially. Like, they need it to be a 10. They need to value the purchase. They need to say, look, Xbox got another hit, but it's...
Xbox is back, baby!
But fortunately, he did give it a 7. I think that reviewer in particular should be as honest as he is about other stuff going forward, if he's not already. Because we have an issue where these games are automatic. Like, who's to say it's even a 7? Like, it automatically gets a 7 because of Starfield and Bethesda.
Right. To play devil's advocate, what I will say is, why did Dan Stapleton review this game when you have, like, most of IGN's long-term crew are gone? You know, Colin Mortieri is off doing his own thing. Greg Miller is off doing his own thing. Marty Sleeve is off doing his own thing. Like, one of the OGs is still there, and Ryan McCaffrey, who is your Xbox person. He's somebody who's plugged into Xbox. Why didn't he review the game? He's reviewed every other major Xbox game, from what I understand. Like, that's a little weird.
That's interesting.
That's weird. And Dan Stapleton has been very public that he is a Sony person, which, hey, more power to you. Like what you like. He's also been very vocal about saying how he's not a fan of Microsoft's consolidation. We're not either. That being said, that's a little strange. Why did he review the game when you have an Xbox person to review the game? And I don't know if that played into it or not. Is that a conspiracy theory? Maybe. But this comes back to that, like, people notice that, right? Because
right.
People are more attentive to things that they care about. That should not have happened. And that goes back to that where, you know, your days are numbered, right? Because the people are following the people that they like, not the outlets anymore. And you have this opportunity, and that you have somebody at IGN that is an Xbox person that has been there for a long time, that understands Xbox, has played a lot of their games, etc. That's why people go to YouTube personalities, because they identify with them. And so then you don't let that person review the Xbox game. That's strange to me. That should not have happened. Why that happened, I can't say, but that should not have happened.
In order to really criticize this guy giving it a 7, for anyone to criticize it, we'd have to look at his other reviews as well.
Which people have done. And again, because review scores are dumb, I don't really care. But if we want to play devil's advocate and conspiracy theorist, it's a little weird. I don't know if he should have reviewed that game. And honestly, he made it worse, though, too, because he went on Twitter and was trying to defend himself and stuff. It's like, dude, just put the review and walk away. Like,
that's it. Yeah.
Like, if you start reviewing going back and defending your other reviews and this review, you're just making it look worse, right? Like, am I crazy in thinking that? Like,
yeah, you did your job. Just move on to the next game.
Right. So, again, it comes back to that personality thing of, like, you're treating this as if you're a personality and people are attacking you based on what you gave other games and stuff like that. But it's, yeah. So, just to play devil's advocate, this man gave a 7 to Vampire Survivors. He gave a 9 out of 10 to Monster Train. We were a big fan of that game. Let's see here.
7 out of 10
to Vampire Survivors. He gave a 9 out of 10 to Jedi Survivor, which I find very interesting considering that game is just now fixed. He gave Weird West an 8, which
I like that game.
Yeah, I like that game.
I don't know if it's an 8. I don't know if it's an 8.
Right. Gears Tactics, 8. I think that's a little high.
Okay. All right.
Outer Worlds, 8.5. I think that's a solid score. Wolfenstein Youngblood, 6.5. That's probably a little low. Give Rage 2 an 8. I think that's a little high. Like, so there's a little bit of weird things here. Like, you can't gain a Jurassic World Evolution a 4.8. Like, come on, man. Like, the game's not a 4. Like, a 4.8 to me is, like, that's bad. And that game is just, it's just not bad. So, I can't look at this review and pick. I'm looking at scores, right? I'm not looking at the person. I'm looking at what he's given things. I can't get a sense of who he is from these scores. And that's my whole point is,
you'd have to read the whole thing. And it's not necessary. I think that's going back to what the texted question is. 7. What do you think?
So I mean, really quick on this topic.
Yeah.
He gave No Man's Sky a 6. Launch No Man's Sky. Yes, at launch. He gave it a 6. If you think that game is a 6 and you think Starfield is a 7, that makes no sense to me at all. At freaking all. Like, that is, we're on polar opposites. As much as I am not a huge fan of Starfield, if you think No Man's Sky is a 6 and you tell me Starfield's a 7, I think you are lying to my face.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, but that's why, you know, when we first started this podcast, we hummed and hawed about it for a second, but we realized no scores because it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Like, because at the end of the day, we're going to be going, we gave this a 7, but so we can't give this a 7, right? Pass or pass is the way to go. Or even a smaller scale, like a 1 to 5 would make more sense than, like, once 10 is just too big. It's, and when you get to the IGN level of notoriety, and let's be real, like, publishers paying you for stuff, you're not giving anything lower than 7 anyway. Like, the 7 is your baseline. The 7 is the new 5. It's the new average, and it's unfortunate.
Right, and it's, again, that review scores are dumb, but unfortunately, they are a necessary evil in how things are currently now. Maybe they'll get better. Maybe they won't. But again, to sort of wrap up this question, I think it's weird that he reviewed this game when Ryan McCaffrey is there. And I say that as a person that I respect Ryan McCaffrey. I actually did meet him once or twice. Very nice guy. I've never met Dan Stapleton, so I cannot comment on that. It goes back to what I said about personalities, and that you have a guy that reviews Xbox stuff, that talks Xbox stuff. He's the host of your Xbox show, and he's been there for a very long time. He should be reviewing this game. Just point blank, because it makes the most sense for everybody. It makes the most sense for you. It makes the most sense for your audience. Your audience comes to Xbox stuff for Ryan McCaffrey, whether they know it or they don't know it, because he is on the face of most of your Xbox stuff. So that's strange to me. And I'll close this by saying Survivor 7 out of 10, you are dead to me. I don't care about anything you have to say ever again. Vampire Survivors is a 12 out of 10, 14 out of 10. Judging by your scale, sir. So, suck on that, Dan.
There's just no way you give, like, what? 7 out of 10 for Vampire? Like, who doesn't love that game?
That game is so good. Oh, God, that game is so good. I just, have you played that split-screen co-op yet? Or single-screen co-op?
Not yet, no.
Play it. It's way better than it should be, just like Vampire Survivors.
I bet it is.
So that's going to do it. Thank you for writing in. 574-651-9256 if you'd like to write in. Starfield, when it comes to Game Pass or Pass, I guess we didn't really do that. But again, I'll tell you this right now. I think you should play it.
Yes.
But
since it doesn't matter, we can split decision on this one.
Yeah. And I can tell you right now, it will not be our top game of the year. Spoiler alert. Like, that's all that really... Really, the only reason we pass or don't pass is so at the end of the year, we can talk about the games that we passed on, but also to give you an idea of what you should and shouldn't play. But this is a game that is so big that, like, you've already made that decision for yourself. So that's what I'll say. But all right, that's going to do this episode. Coming up
just
next.
Just for the record, though, I say don't play it, but
again, I say play it.
It doesn't matter. You already played it anyway.
Right. So we're going to be talking about Sea of Stars, and then we've got a couple dual episodes coming up because somebody was like, hey, I want to play Quake 2. So we didn't talk about Quake 2. And then I was like, hey, did you play Quake 2? And he was like, I don't want to play Quake 2. And I was like, well, then what the hell? So.
Well, I tried playing Quake 2. Then I realized, oh, wait, this is Quake 2. I'm out.
All right. That's going to do it with this episode of Game Pass or Pass. We'll see you next time with Sea of Stars.
Good day, sirs.